Today is June 22nd, 2018. My name is Deborah Schwartz, and I'm sitting here in the Mill Valley Library sound booth on behalf of the Mill Valley Library and the Mill Valley Historical Society. I'm very pleased to be sitting in. Right next to me is a lovely woman, and I'm going to say your name right, Annabella Robinson. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Well, welcome to the Mill Valley Library sound booth. Thank you so much for sitting here with me today, because, Annabella, you have an interesting story, which I'm very pleased to sit down and discuss with you.
Well, thank you for having me.
Let us begin with a little bit about your family history, shall we? Tell me, if you can, a little bit about your ancestry. Where did your parents come from? Where did your grandparents come from? Just briefly, and please include their names.
Okay. I was born in a little town called Niles, Ohio, and my mom and dad were from Italy, and of course my grandparents, and never did know my grandparents, but my father was very, very, very strict, and mom wasn't that strict with us.
And your father's name?
Frederick.
Frederick what?
Frederick Narchi.
And he was from?
Italy.
As well. So he was he an Italian immigrant?
Yes, definitely.
And your mother as well?
And my mom too.
And do you remember her maiden name?
Ferrara.
Ferrara.
Her name was Isolina Ferrara.
So you were saying about your father?
Yeah, my father was very strict, because he was raised that way in Italy. He was very brutal, really. He used to beat us, and he just wasn't, he didn't know, because he was treated that way when he was growing up in Italy. And mother was very meek and very quiet, and she, there was never hugging any going in the family at all. We never had a Christmas tree. I never had a baby doll. But I survived being raised by an Italian father. So I had four sisters and two brothers.
And their names?
My two brothers were Anthony, and the other brother was Frank. And my four sisters were Edith, Violet, Mary, and June. And they're all gone now, except my one sister, June, who lives in Texas.
And you were born what year?
I was born in 1931.
1931. In a small town.
In a very small town, extremely prejudiced. It's right next door to Youngstown, Ohio. And then I moved to we wanted my mom to divorce my dad, but she was extremely afraid. And so I was 14 at the time. And my older brothers and sisters, they got behind my mom, and they made her go to the courtroom, and they actually pushed her through the door. So mother divorced dad, and we were so happy. And then we were all scattered all over, and I moved with my older sister, Mary. And June went to Arizona with my father, because he promised her he was going to buy her a horse, because she had a horse of her own when she was about 12, but it got so shell-shocked from the tornado that she couldn't ride it anymore. So she went with my father she only stayed there a year because she couldn't handle it. She came back when she was about 14 or so. So then I stayed with my sister Mary, and my sister Violet, I moved with her also. I mean, we were just scattered all over, because mother couldn't take us, because she had to go in with them in a family and be a housekeeper. So anyway, then I moved with my sister Violet. She was my favorite sister. And then
and she was living where?
In Youngstown, Ohio. And so then then I got a lovely job at this beautiful furniture store, and I mean shoe store. And I was going to be an Arthur Murray dance instructor, and I was dating this young man who was very jealous of me, and he said, "I don't want you to hold any other man in your arms." And I quit. I was very naive then, of course. So I quit. So then I was walking by downtown Youngstown, and this man was in the window. He was fixing the shoes up, you know, and he said, "Come on in and buy some shoes. Come on in and buy." And They were like $100 a pair then.
That would have been like $2,000 a pair now, wouldn't you
think? Oh, they're beautiful shoes. And then they were beautiful shoes. So anyway, I came in and he said, I'm looking for a job. And he said, well, come on upstairs. Mr. Lustig is the owner of the store. And so I went upstairs, and he was 55 years old at the time, and I was probably 19. And so we were talking. He said, well, what are your qualifications? I said, well, I was going to be an Arthur Murray dance instructor, and then I babysit a lot. It was 50 cents an hour then. And he said, I can't help you there because I'm not married. And I said, oh, and I was very forward. And I said, well, why aren't you married? He said, why have one when I can have them all?
Oh, my. That's a little inappropriate to say to a...
I know, a 19-year-old.
No, but so, back then, not so much.
But he hired me, and he said, Ann, I'm going to put you... When the elevator door opens and all these little ladies, and there was no shoes in the store. You couldn't see any shoes. They were all behind beautiful curtains. They had sofas. And they had their own men that they wanted them to wait on them. So when I want you to welcome the ladies and take them to where and ask them who they like their salesman to be. I did that for about almost 2 years.
So you were a hostess.
I was a hostess, right.
Yes, to an exclusive shoe store.
Oh, it was a beautiful shoe store. Oh, my God. And they had handbags on the first floor. And I met this little lady. She was, Hattie was her name, and she did all the purses, right? And so
we did the purses? What do you mean? Make them?
She sold purses.
Oh, she sold them.
Purses, sorry. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we became friends, so we'd go out and have lunch together. And she was in her late 60s, almost 70. And here I was about 19. And so anyway, there was one of the nephews of Mr. Lustig worked in there. He was really a handsome young man. He said, Ann, I would love to date you, but we're not allowed to date outside of our religion. That's how it was in those days.
And what was his religion?
Jewish. They were Jewish. Honey.
And you were a Catholic.
And right? I was a Catholic.
Yes.
So anyway, that ended that. But anyway, so I met a friend there that worked in the office, and she said, Ann, I want to get out of this town, Youngstown, Ohio. It's extremely prejudiced.
What do you mean? How did prejudice show its ugly little head in that
spot? Pardon?
In what ways was your prejudice evident? Give me an example of...
Oh, the blacks, the Jews lived on one side, the north side. The blacks lived on the west side. The Italians lived on the what other side. And the Polacks and Hungarians lived on... It was horrible growing up there, honey. It was awful. And then the elevator girl happened to be black. Her name was Lorraine. So I wanted to be her friend. And so I said, Lorraine, I'd like to have you over for lunch. So I told Mother, and she said, oh, no, no, Ann, you can't have her here. Mother probably would have let me, but not my father probably wouldn't have. So anyway, that ended that. But anyway, so then Virginia said, Ann, let's get out of this town. Let's join the Navy. And I said, okay.
And Virginia's the black girl?
Pardon? No, she was white.
The Virginia is your sister? I'm sorry, I'm a little lost.
She worked in the store. She was in the office, Virginia.
Okay.
No, Lorraine was the elevator girl. Mm-hmm. But anyway, she said, let's join the Navy. I said, okay, just like that. I was brave. So anyway, she told me a week or so, I don't really want to go. I said, Virginia, I said, I'm going to join the United States Air Force. I didn't know anything about it.
In the 30s now. No,
this was in the 1950, I think, or
50,
so.
50, after World War II.
Mm-hmm. No, it was during the Korean War.
It was during the Korean War.
Yeah, so when I was in high school, we were not allowed to be teenagers. We had to come home right after school. We couldn't go out for soda fountains or ice cream or anything. We had to bring our little legs as fast as we could to come home. We had to be in the yard before my father come home. Otherwise, we would have got a beating. And June and I, we went to, this is something. June and I went to the carnival. We didn't have any money, but we wanted to go and see what it was like. We came home. My father was home. So June, we were at the front door, and June said, you go in first. I said, no, you go in first. And we kept about 10 minutes. So I don't know who went in first to this day, but he grabbed one of us, and he beat us, both of us. So we left the yard. He was poor dad. He did tell my mom he tried to change for 30 years. He couldn't.
Hmm. My goodness.
Because in those days, they were immigrants. They didn't know about going to a psychologist or psychiatrist for help.
Mm-hmm. So anyway. you grew up in an environment where there was socially and in the whole town quite a bit of judgment and racism. Yes. Oh. And then at home, brutality.
We got it from, two different ways? Oh, yeah.
You got a right punch and a left. But then it was time to join the Air Force.
So anyway, in school I got straight Fs. I couldn't concentrate because I'd sit in algebra class and the teacher, he'd say, Ann, wake up. I remember that. So I hardly made it through high school. I just barely made it through high school. So I got in. And in the Air Force, you have to have good grades, too, not just, you know. Mm-hmm. So anyway, to this day, I think the reason why, he said, okay, Ann, I'm going to let you in, he said, because you are so beautiful.
So I was going to, I didn't want to say this before, but obviously, just in the short time we've been talking, the effect you have on people around you, jealous boyfriends, flirtatious boss, employees, obviously, you had an allure.
Had what, dear?
An allure.
I guess I did because even the Air Force said, we're going to let you in because you are beautiful. It's okay. So I went to Texas, and oh, how the girls cried. They wanted out. Mostly, I don't want to like to label people, but you're black girls because they didn't have that discipline. So they said, Ann, you seem to enjoy it in here. I said, well, if you were raised by an Italian immigrant father, with all the discipline, I went through it flying colors.
Oh my goodness.
You had a shiny shoe for 1 hour.
You were well honed for just taking orders and executing them. Interesting.
And then my squadron commander was 21 years old, and she was beautiful. She was really, I mean, she molded 52 of us into one when we marched. We competed with all the other squadrons on the field, in a big field, and we won all the time. And
where were you stationed?
In San Antonio, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And so I met this young man, and he was going to take me out to lunch, and we didn't have a phone in our they call it the day room. There was no phone. You had a squawk box, and your name was Ann. You have a telephone call. So I ran out into the other little bit right next door to the building, and I had just taken a shower, and my pores were all open. I was delirious that afternoon. I almost died from pneumonia. And you know, with the squadron commander, she said she made me put on a full dress uniform, and here I was getting delirious, and they took me away in an ambulance. And I could, to this day, I could never figure out why would she want me to go in a full dress uniform with nylons and a girdle. We wore girdles in those days.
Well, did you get sick running because you had just been out of the shower to the phone? You were
because
exposed
to the Texas wind was really blowing, and I just threw my robe on.
And
I went to and answered the phone.
And that phone call, for some reason, you became ill at that time.
I got pneumonia. Oh. I was in the hospital 10 days. So then I got well and I was okay. So then I graduated from basic training and then they sent us to Wyoming, Cheyenne, Wyoming in the midwinter.
Mm-hmm. Cold.
Yeah. Oh, the barracks, all the wind came right through the cracks in the
Yes.
And so then we were there. I was there. I had to what I was learning was looking in thick manuals for an airplane part. Just by the number we had to find it was
that
there.
Was your job, to look page after page after page for an airplane
it was so
part?
Boring. We had to learn that. That was only like 6 weeks. And then I met this little blonde. She happened to be from Tallahassee, Florida. And she was 18 and I was 21 going on 22. And so we became friends. So we were waiting for our orders to come in. And we were so worried, we didn't want to go back to Texas. And when they said California, oh, we jumped for joy. Oh, my goodness. We're so excited. So when we arrived, see, they send your papers and all about you ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
It was at Parks Air Force Base in Livermore, you know, mm-hmm. Pleasanton area in
mm-hmm.
Livermore.
Mm-hmm. Back then would have been just rolling hills.
Oh, it was.
Not a
cows.
Lot of, yes.
A lot of cows.
Yes.
And, Beautiful. So anyway, we were sent to Parks Air Force Base, but all your paperwork comes ahead of you. So they knew, all the soldiers knew we were coming. Oh, all the soldiers knew we were coming. And so they were leaning out the windows as we arrived. But you'll love this little short thing, I'll tell you. So the sergeant picked us up in his car or whatever. So as we were going through the rolling hills, I saw all these cows on the hillside. And they had, you know how they had walkways going like this. And so I said, God, I asked, I was so naive. How do the cows keep falling off the hillside? Because they were it was steep. He said, when they go this way, the right leg and front leg and back leg is shorter so they can balance themselves going.
So you're coming in pretty simple in many ways, but you're good at taking orders and following them. And you're curious.
Oh, always curious. Always curious. I guess maybe being raised by two Italian immigrants, they hardly knew any English. I spoke Italian until I was 6 years old, until I started school. And then very broken English. To this day, my sentences are, one of my neighbors said, Jan, she says, you say your sentences backwards. I didn't know I did that. Mm. But anyway.
So you're now over by Pleasanton and Livermore. And what's the year?
1955.
1955. Mm-hmm. This is before they even put in the San Luis Reservoir and canals and all that. That was built in 1956, I believe. Mm-hmm. So there was still a large delta-type region in the vicinity. The landscape itself, I'm thinking, what it must have been like when you arrived.
It was beautiful.
Tell me a little bit about what you saw visually.
Just a lot of agriculture and a lot of a lot of cows, of course, a lot of horses, rolling hills. It was just no homes at all, no houses at all. Just the base was there. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So you're with your one friend, or were there other girls that came? I mean,
the two of us.
Yeah, just the two of orders. You. Were you really kind of the only women about? Were there many other women?
Oh, on the base, you mean?
Uh-huh.
Oh, no. We had a barracks of probably maybe 50 girls in our barracks. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I learned how to type in 30 minutes. And I got a job as kind of a secretary receptionist. And my husband, Glenn, he was a basketball star. When he was in Marin City,
let's just pause for a moment. Okay. Because one of the reasons why you're here in this sound room with me right now, a good part of it is your unique experience here in Mill Valley has very much to do with your husband, Glenn. Mm-hmm. Glenn Robinson. You had an interracial marriage. Glenn was African American.
Right.
You were Italian American, American, white. And this, after coming from an incredibly racist environment, this is interesting. And you came to Mill Valley. There weren't many African American families, or Negroes, men and women, as it was called back then. Mm-hmm. So this is something we let's explore, if you don't mind. Let's explore that. First, tell me a little bit about how you met Glenn.
Oh, okay.
And a little bit about Glenn, because I'm sorry he's not here to be interviewed as well.
I know. You would have loved him. Anyway, he was the basketball star when he grew up in Marin City. He played ball.
So he grew up in Marin City?
Oh, yeah.
When did his family come here?
In the 40s to work in the shipyards.
So they're in the back then, for people that don't know this, that are listening to this interview, during World War II, when the shipyards were built at various locations all across the bay, here in Sausalito, they shaved down a hill and installed a shipyard in a matter of months, and then went out to bring workers in from the south. They came from the south on trains here to San Francisco.
Right.
And Sausalito. Marin City was built to house those workers quite quickly, as a matter of fact.
Yes.
And so Glenn's parents came in that wave, correct?
At Austin, Texas. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Glenn was 9 years old. He had two sisters. So he went to the gym every day and practiced basketball, and he became the star of Tamalpais High School. They named the basketball court after my husband.
And what year did he graduate from?
1950.
And that would be Tamalpais High School. He graduated in 1950.
Mm-hmm.
Was he the only African American to graduate that year in the school? Were there others?
No. A majority of them came from Marin City,
mm-hmm.
The black kids. Mm-hmm.
So what was your, just before we move away from his family of origin, his parents' name, do you recall?
Rosemary and Frank.
Rosemary and Frank
Robinson.
And they came from Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And Glenn's siblings' names?
Glenn's who?
His siblings, his sisters.
Elizabeth and Lula.
Oh, that's pretty.
Lula May.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Glenn had, he was physically gifted. He was a great basketball player.
He was the basketball star. When he graduated from high school, two colleges wanted him.
Uh-huh.
But when they found out he was black, they didn't take him. He was 18, 17 years old.
Did he ever describe his experiences at Tam High and in Marin City as a black man? Black family?
No one ever thought to interview him at all.
But did he ever tell you what it was like? Did he share with you his experience?
Oh, yeah, about the college thing. Nobody accepted him. Very few things he talked about. Mm-hmm.
And then he went on, you told me before this interview that he had a very interesting position in government.
He became the first United States federal marshal appointed by President Carter west of the Mississippi, the first black U.S. marshal west of the Mississippi. They may have had others, maybe one or two in the South, I'm not sure. But they do have two United States federal marshals in California because California is so big, one in Los Angeles, and Glenn had all northern California up to the Oregon border and down to Monterey. That was all his territory.
So he went from, he didn't get to go to two of the colleges that didn't want him to play.
He went to the College of Marin.
He went to College of Marin.
Mm-hmm.
So he did his, he just got an AA at College of Marin. But you mentioned that he worked with John F. Kennedy.
Well, when Glenn became the U.S. Federal Marshal, Robert Kennedy came to California on an anti-poverty program down in the San Joaquin Valley. So Glenn happened to be, I don't know if he was the marshal then or if he was the deputy U.S. marshal, because you have to work your way up from deputy marshal, chief deputy, and then you have to be appointed by two congressmen. And Phil Burton and John Burton recommended Glenn to become the U.S. marshal. So when Robert came, Glenn was his personal bodyguard for 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
And they went down to San Joaquin Valley and was on an anti-poverty program. And when Robert came back, he shook Glenn's hand and he took off his tie clasp that his brother John Kennedy gave his brother, and he gave it to Glenn. So I still have it. It's a PT-109. A boat, but his other brother died on that boat, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So Glenn, I still have that. So he gave, and then he told Glenn, he said, I wish you were going with me to Los Angeles because that's kooky country. And they killed him 3 days later. And we were watching it on television, when he was giving that big speech at that hotel. And Glenn's blood pressure went up and never did go down to normal, blood pressure, because he loved Robert.
You mean while watching that live where Bobby Kennedy is
slain. Mm-hmm.
So your husband wasn't the bodyguard to John Kennedy, but in fact for Robert Kennedy.
Oh, Robert Kennedy,
yes.
Right. Oh, yes.
And so he watched him slain, and you mean to say that his blood pressure was higher for the rest of his life from that?
Of course, we didn't know it right away, but I guess as Glenn started getting, going to the doctor and getting examined.
Mm-hmm. So he was deeply affected by that.
Oh, yeah. He loved Robert, yeah. And then when we were coming across the Golden Gate Bridge, here comes Robert in a little old Volkswagen with a roof.
Yeah, with the
And Robert was standing up, waving at everybody. We were right behind him. It was incredible to see that. And Glenn was we were so excited, honey. It was incredible.
How is it? What after Glenn went to College of Marin. How was it he was put into the fast track to become a federal marshal? What was his job after college? I mean, how did he get the position?
When he, Dr. Daniel Collins, who was a dentist in Marin City at the clinic, and my son Marcus was after I got out of the Air Force, we came into Marin City to live because we didn't have any other place to go.
We mm-hmm. better find out. We're missing a component here. We're missing how you met Glenn.
Mm-hmm. Let's. Glenn was a lady softball coach.
Oh, that's right. You mentioned that. Lady softball coach.
And I wanted to go out for tennis. So I went out on the tennis courts and I met this young German and we started playing tennis. So then Glenn was the coach and the ladies in the barracks kept saying, "Ann, we need more ladies on the... airman on the baseball team," and I wasn't that particular about going for baseball. So then Glenn had his eye on me for about 2 weeks, right? In the meantime, he was dating a lovely blonde from Belvedere. You know the Keaton family, the Keaton mortuary, the Keaton?
No, I'm not familiar, but I'll...
They have them all over Marin County. Mm-hmm. Anyway, their daughter was dating Glenn. She was a beautiful blonde. They told Glenn when they found out, they said, "We want to give you $5,000 if you leave our daughter alone and don't date her."
That's a lot of money.
I told Glenn, "You should have taken her. You still dated her." So anyway, he did go away to the service. And
so he joined the service, and that's how he met you, because he was working in the Air Force as well.
Yeah, he was, and all he did was play basketball. He named the Blue Devils a team at... Parks Air Force Base, you know, in Pleasanton. He named the team. He did nothing but play basketball for 4 years.
His service was to play ball.
That was it. And then...
And then be a coach as well, which is how he met his wife-to-be.
That's all he did, yeah. He was a... What he would do to... And this is another record you'll love. He scored 68 points in one, all by himself, in one game for the United States Air Force. I forget what team they played. It was probably all Air Force teams. Then that's more than Curry has scored yet.
So, what did Glenn look like? Was he very tall?
He was 6 feet two, and he very handsome. And I think what impressed me was his muscles. He had a beautiful physique. He was tall, very good looking. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And but yet you come from an environment with infused racism. Did you hesitate to go for?
I didn't even see the color of him because he was a basketball star and he had a beautiful body and all the other ladies on the team were. They said, "Ann, you seem to be his pet. He keeps hitting the balls to you. He made me the best left fielder the team ever had," and they said, "Can't you fix me up with Glenn?" And I was dating him for 8 months. Nobody knew about it. You know why? There was a beautiful girl in the barracks. She had green eyes. She could have been another Elizabeth Taylor. She was lovely. So anyway, the girls in the barracks found out she was dating a black airman, and they beat her up right in the barracks. Isn't that horrible?
Speechless. They beat her up?
So then after I was dating Glenn, and so I didn't tell anybody in my barracks that I was for 8 months. They'd say, "Ann, where are you going every weekend? Where do you go?" And I made up this fabulous story. "Oh, I met this man. He happened to be from Ohio. He lives in San Francisco, so I go and see him every weekend."
You have an amazing capacity to deal with things. I mean,
the way my dad treated us, it was mean and brutal, and we were so frightened of him, we had to cheat, honey. I grew up to be a cheater, but I'm glad I did.
Some skills hard learned, but good to have.
What I really like about my parents, though, I did forgive them, not my mom, but my dad, but they never put any hang-ups on us. They didn't know how. "You got to be a lawyer. You got to be this. You got to do that. You have to do. They never said anything like that. They didn't know how, probably.
So you've got a secret boyfriend.
Yeah. So Glenn. Yeah.
That could have been kind of hot. You know.
Well, you know,
sneaking
that was,
around like that.
That was, yeah. It was. It was. Anyway, when he took me off the base, now that base was a very strategic base. They had a guard at the gate every time. You had to, you know, they had to look at you when you went out and when you came in, and because all these airmen were sent to Korea. And so Glenn had to cover me on the floor of the back seat with a blanket.
Oh my goodness.
And then he went, and I was just shaking. And then the minute we got away from the base, I was like, what, 22? Going on, yeah, I just jump over. You know, when you're young, you could just,
you can just jump
over
right. You're petite. I imagine you were very...
I was very small, yeah. Oh, and I looked great in my uniforms, too. We had two different kind of uniforms. One you had to iron was cotton with a cute little skirt and a top, and the other one was the blue outfit, you know.
It's a little more stiff. Yes, I'd love to get some photos. So you... wild thing that you are.
I was.
You have a secret life with a secret boyfriend. You are have jumped away from your place of origin and the racism that lived there. You're now a California girl. And you're doing just what you want to do.
That's right. Ever since I married Glenn, I just, you know, even then I used to babysit for the base commander. He had a 5-year-old boy. And then I got a job in the officers club. And Evelyn and I, this 18-year-old, Evelyn and I would only date officers because they would wine and dine us in the city. We had cars, you know. So, but anyway, one pilot
felt...
Oh, on the cable. Evelyn and I wanted to go on the cable car first time. It was in June, and of course
what? Do you remember the year? This is before you met Glenn.
Just before, before I met Glenn. Yeah, and we were on the cable car, and these two airmen they had to jump on real fast, and they were right in front of us like this. You know how you hang on?
Yeah, right. You're in this sitting down, and they're hanging on,
yeah,
so you're face to face.
Right,
you can feel their breath.
They were both pilots. Okay, so...
just a little tidbit there.
So Ira Laney was his name. And so he fell in love with me, and yet they were going to ship him out. So he started writing me 9-page letters from Korea. And so then he said, I'm going to be coming back. I want you to meet me at... This was before I met Glenn, and I want you to meet me at the ship wherever they come in. And I never heard from him. So then, I wonder what happened to him. And so I went ahead and I've met Glenn and married Glenn, and this is another one. You'll love this one. So anyway, they found out that Glenn and I were going to get married.
Wait. First, tell us what happened to the guy that disappeared.
Oh, okay. After we got married, we were sent to Alaska. He sent me a nice letter. He said, Ann, he said, the reason why that I never had you meet me at the ship, because I was wounded, and they cut part of his penis off. Oh my God, I cried. He said, and I can never have children. He said, and I didn't know whether you wanted to, you know, be with me or not.
Oh dear, that is a very difficult story.
Yeah, the shrapnel, I guess, went in his.
Independent.
So anyway, that was the end of Ira. I used to think, and he was 39 at the time, and I was what, 22.
It was that little bit of shrapnel, and it would have maybe had a different course in your life.
You never know.
You know. So you meet Glenn, and you're dating him for 8 months. You know, I'm going to take a risk here and ask you something, because you're so forthright. This is before birth control. There's no birth control pill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had to be very careful about.
We didn't make love that much, because we couldn't. When we came back from Alaska, we were married, of course, but when.
I'm talking about before you were married.
Yeah, we didn't.
The dating. Were women pretty. Pretty careful back
then?
You were definitely...
I would never let him ejaculate in me. I was so afraid, because my father, you know what my father said? For our sex education, you'll love this. If you bring a baby home, I'll kill you. That was our sex education.
You and your friends did have intercourse, even though you were just careful, or did you abstain? Before you had access, I mean, could you get birth control at the base? Did they supply?
No, because I didn't want anybody to know I was even dating.
So when you say dating, is that a euphemism for actually having relations with somebody? Were you sexually, you know, active before you were married in the base and around? Because this is a time in this country before birth control, there things were different. Women took risks.
Oh, I know.
You were a free spirit.
When I was 18 years old and 19, and before I joined the service, I did, you know, make love to different men, but I would never let them ejaculate me. I was because what my father said.
You would.
Oh, scary. Anyway,
you are an adventurous spirit. So you go and you date Glenn for. Let's get back to Glenn now that I know a little bit more about you. And thanks for sharing. You date him for how many months? 8 months, and then you were married.
Then somebody on the base found out somehow. I may have told somebody, one of my friends, or not Evelyn, but after I did, I'll tell you what happened with that. But anyway. Somebody on the base found out what they did to Glenn. They shipped him to Alaska.
When they found out that you had a serious relationship, they shipped him off to separate you.
And then they sent 11 men in with his same AFSC number to go off to Korea to fight. To this day, I always wonder how many of those men got killed.
Because of your relationship.
Because of them finding out we were going to get married. So then they...
Were you challenged? Did people come? Was this all hidden, or did they come to you and...
Oh, yeah, my squadron commander came. She talked to me for 1 hour. Oh, your kids are going to really suffer. You should not marry this man. What about your parents? This and that. For 1 hour, she talked to me.
And what was your response?
I just listened to her, I guess. I don't remember, dear, tell you the truth, but...
Not to be deterred? I mean, had you made up your mind and this is what was... Those muscles must have been just beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so anyway...
What other qualities did you like about Glenn besides his physical beauty and acumen?
He really didn't have that many. He was just a basketball star. He wasn't bright at all. He wasn't bright... and look what he became. I can't believe it. Well, they say behind every good man, a good man is a good woman. But anyway, I really helped him a lot. He needed his teeth fixed. I cried. They took 21 of his teeth out.
Glenn's?
All at once.
Who did this?
The dentist.
The base dentist? And why is this?
Because he had cavities all in them. In those days, you know, people.
They just gave him dentures.
Parents, He had a denture. All those years, if I went in the, if I opened the bathroom door and didn't have it locked, he'd push it tight. I never saw him without his teeth.
I see.
He was so vain.
Well,
he was wonderful.
A little traumatizing.
So anyway, he had a beautiful, and I mentioned, I said, Glenn, I said, why don't you go to the dentist and see what they can do for your teeth? So thanks to me, he did go. And he had a beautiful smile. I said, you'd have a beautiful, because he'd cover his mouth when you smile.
Uh-huh.
I said, you would have a beautiful smile if you would go and have your teeth taken care of. I didn't know they were going to pull 21 teeth.
Oh, my goodness. How many are in our mouths?
Poor thing. I felt so bad.
Anyway. Well, so he gets shipped off to Alaska.
We got married before that.
So you just went ahead and married him, and did they know you were married when they shipped him off? Did they mean to separate you, or did the base, or did you just go ahead and get married and not tell anyone? So when they were trying to...
No, I didn't. We didn't tell. We got married by this judge in Oakland, and my maid of honor was black, and the best man was black. They were friends, and he was on the basketball team with Glenn, and... So the judge looked at me the whole time. He would not look at Glenn. He would not look at the maid of honor or the best man. He must have been a racist judge. Can you imagine how he judged blacks or minorities on the bench? He wouldn't look at only at me.
Interesting.
But and through the years, when Glenn became the U.S. Marshal, I said, I hope that judge would see pictures of my... He had held a Patty Hearst case. That was his case, the Patty Hearst case.
The judge?
No, my husband.
Oh, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Well,
so anyway, let's get back to Alaska. So they shipped him to Alaska, and I stayed with this couple in Marin City that we were friends with for a long time. I stayed with them, and then I flew up to Alaska. Glenn got a little apartment, and with no locks on the door or anything. And so we were there for 2.5 years.
You lived in where in Alaska?
Fairbanks, Alaska, for
My
two
goodness.
And a half years. It was wonderful. And there was nothing there but snow.
But did you leave the Air Force at that time?
Oh, you have to get out in those days. In those days, you had to get a discharge.
So now, did you ask for a discharge?
No, they automatically give it to you.
So after you're serving, how much time?
Only about 2 years. I really joined to get away from that town and travel a little bit, but that was fine.
So you were discharged, and you went to go live with your husband in Fairbanks, Alaska.
And that's where our oldest son, Marcus, was born.
And what year was that?
He was born in 1956,
okay.
Marcus.
So he's 62 now.
Yeah, I know. He's a top realtor in Marin, in Southern Marin now. He's been selling houses for 38 years or so. It's amazing.
Boy. He's seen some
changes. He's married to a Mexican dentist from, Mexico City.
Uh-huh.
She's a dentist, Gabriela Garcia Gojas, excellent dentist. And he has two girls. Beautiful girls. Mm-hmm.
Okay, Marcus. So you're in Fairbanks with your lovely husband and your new baby boy.
Mm-hmm. That was quite an experience.
Tell me about that.
Well, Glenn, there's two Air Force bases, Ladd Air Force Base and Eielson. Eielson is 26 miles away from Fairbanks. So they send Glenn to Eielson, probably for meanness, I don't know. He could have gone right to Ladd, was right there where we lived. Excuse me. He got on the bus every day and went to Eielson. Anybody did nothing but play basketball again.
This is just so interesting. I guess they really keep morale up and keep the competitive spirit going. And
oh, yeah. Yeah. So he was
a basketball coach and a team organizer and all that. He was Mr. Basketball for the...
He was, yeah. That's when he scored 68 points. I forget what team he played. Maybe it was in Anchorage, Alaska. But anyway... In the meantime, I was getting ready to, I got pregnant. I walked 16 blocks in 20 below weather to where I got a job there, working in a shop where they sold stereos and TVs or whatever. And so I worked there for 6 months, and then I got pregnant with Marcus, so I quit. And then, and in Alaska, the water, there's so much iron in the water, it turns everything brown. All my dishes turn brown. And Marcus was born. So we had cloth diapers then. Do you know of any mother that would wash their baby's diapers by hand? I had to wash his diapers by hand. We bought jugs of water. It was only like 50 cents for 5 gallons. And we had to heat the water. I heated the water. Scrub them before I even scrubbed them, and hung them outside. My diapers were the only white diapers in the neighborhood. All the other women's brushes, diapers were brown. Mm. I tell that to Marcus every now and then. Marcus, don't you ever forget your mother had to wash your... Do you know of anybody else that... Any other mother that washed their baby's
diapers? Most mothers at that time would have had a diaper surface. The trucks came.
I did when I got home.
Yes,
yeah, with
but
the other
you, would,
two.
You could rely on the diaper service.
They didn't have it. They didn't have it there. That
oh, that's love.
1956.
Okay, so you're living in Alaska. When is it that you came to Mill Valley?
Okay, so we came back from Alaska, and we lived in Marin City for 5 years.
And what year did you come back to Marin City?
Two and a half years from, say, 1950... We got married in 56, 57, 58, probably 58 and a half of 1959, we came back.
Okay.
He got discharged in Seattle, Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And then we came right to Marin City because we had no place to go. We stayed with his mom and dad in this teeny little apartment. He had two sisters.
And your baby? Did you have more than one baby by then?
No, just Marcus, thank goodness. Then we found an apartment, and then Glenn got a job. He had three jobs when we first were married. He worked in the liquor store in Marin City.
Mm-hmm.
He taught exercise class for overweight women. And then he worked in Sausalito. You know the chutes that they put on airplanes, those escape chutes?
Mm-hmm.
They were made in Sausalito. So he got a job there, too. So we managed to save $2,000 within 5 years. Wasn't that nice?
Mm-hmm.
So then after 5 years... Marcus was in preschool in Mill Valley. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to move out.
Over by the community church? Which preschool?
No, it was on Marin Avenue. It was run by a woman from England. She was extremely strict. And she told me, she said, now if the children here don't behave, I whip them with a strap.
Whoa.
With a belt. She told me that, yeah.
And
can you believe in those days that Marcus was, in preschool. So he was, what, three years old then.
So and yet you took your children there?
Oh, yeah, because Marcus, I was very disciplined with my children, not mean or anything. But anyway, no, Marcus was always good. He didn't need a spanking. So then, but then, you know, when he got, then he went to school where we moved to in Homestead Valley. There's a school right down the street, so that's where he went.
So did you buy a house in Homestead?
This is an incredible story. Okay, so my mom wanted to come and meet Glenn. Mom.
I didn't even think, my goodness, what were your parents thinking?
My father never knew. I would never tell him.
You never told him you were married to a black man?
I was afraid of him. I'll tell you what happened. But anyway, I wrote mother and my sisters. All my sisters put me down. My mom had one of my sisters write a letter, a long letter. And she said in her broken English, Anna, why you want to marry a black man? There's a lot of men out there. I'll never forget mother saying that on the letter. So anyway, after we moved in our home, mother did come. But how we got our home was we knew this couple in Marin City. They were Caucasian. He was Russian, and she was American. They had two little kids, and they lived near us. We didn't socialize that much with them, but hi, how are you, and this and that. So he was a small-time builder, right? So anyway, he moved away. We didn't know where he moved. So Marcus was going on 5 years old. We wanted to get a better school for him because schools weren't that good then. They were okay. But anyway, then in those days, if a realtor would sell a black family a house, they'd get fired on the spot.
Right.
You know that. So
yes, there was an institutional racism within this country. Where it was redlining, I believe it was called,
mm-hmm.
where it was understood, especially in suburban areas, that there were places that you couldn't sell a house to a black family or people of color.
Mm-hmm.
It was a whole, I remember studying this when I was at Berkeley, there was a whole philosophy behind the real estate values. Would they go up? Would they go down? You know,
these two kids. So we went out looking for a home. My mother was coming with one of my sisters and maybe a nephew or so, whatever. So we were looking for a house because we were living in Marin City and they were all shacks. They were just shacks. So when we were, Molly and Maxine moved away, and we were out looking for signs for sale on the lawn, you know,
mm-hmm.
or wherever. So we went out. I don't know what possessed us to go up North Ferndale up to on Madrone Park Circle in Homestead Valley. There was this Jewish family. They wanted to sell us their home, and he wanted $24,000 for it. And it had a beautiful view of the mountain, but it looked like a barn. You know how the barns were shaped like
mm-hmm.
that?
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful family.
What was the family's name?
Gee, he was an attorney, and I don't remember their names.
Okay.
But anyway, we were coming down the street, and lo and behold, who was at the mailboxes? Those two little kids that lived in Marin City.
That was your sign.
I said, Glenn, look, those are the Maloof kids. And we stopped. I said, Glenn, stop the car. I'm glad he didn't just keep going because, you know, men don't like to stop. They keep going.
Yeah.
So anyway, I said, are you the Maloof? Yes, we're the Maloof kids. And where do you live? And they turned and pointed across the street to the house we bought. I said, is your mom home? Yeah, they're there. So I said, Glenn, back up. Let's just say no sign on the deck or nothing. I said, Glenn, let's back up and say hi to Maxine. And we didn't even know them that well. So I knock on the door. I knocked on the door and I said, she opened the door. I said, what are you doing in the neighborhood? I said, we're looking for a house. She said, this one's for sale. And I start crying. I said, she said, well, come on in, Molly. His nickname was Molly. He was Othel, a Russian, right? So she said, come on in. She said, Molly's out on the deck. So we went.
Wait, was it their house for sale or the house across the street?
No, their house.
So that was, okay, so the Jewish family
was up the street on Madrone Park Circle.
And you, then you see your friends, from, and it's their house is also for sale.
Yeah, when Maxine said, no sign or nothing, she said, well, this house is for sale. She said, Molly built it as a spec house to see if it would sell. We don't even have it on the market yet. And so she said, and I walked in the hallway, in the entranceway, and I said, well, we'll buy it. We'll take it. She said, well, don't you want to see the rest of the house? I said, no, we'll take it. That's how desperate we were. So we went out on the deck, and Molly was sitting there, and we sat. He gave us a glass of wine. We started talking. He said, I want 24/7 for the house. And he said, how much do you have in the bank? You can get a loan either then. Uh-huh. Blacks couldn't get a loan.
Uh-huh.
So I said, we saved $2,000. I said, well, you're going to need a little more than that. And my heart sank. I said, oh, no. We needed $5,400 down. He wanted $5,400 down. We only had two. Do you know he lent us a second? He didn't even know us that well. But he was extremely liberal. They branded him as a communist because he hated America so much because what they did to the minorities and whoever, you know. So anyway, we said, okay. And I was so excited.
Where did they go?
Well, he bought some 5 lots up on the hill, not too far from us, and built some homes up there and lived there for a long time. We had him over for dinner. But I was young. I was like, 29 or so. And I didn't know to really have them over more, and I really feel sorry about that.
So you're living now, what street, Ferndale?
North Ferndale Avenue, yes, for 50 years.
What's the address?
309. Oh, my God, we were so excited. Then
how
Mom
big was
came,
the house?
Well, it was just the upper floor, mm-hmm. three bedrooms and one bath. So when we had Marcus, he was the only child. Then I had Curtis, and then we had Stacy. So they each had their own bedrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And then through the years, we wanted a bigger house. So we added the whole downstairs. Now we have 6 bedrooms and 3 baths. So
are you still living there now? Yes?
Curtis is living with me for 15 years.
Oh, well, we'll get to Curtis after we talk a little bit more about your story.
Yes, but anyway, yeah, we were thrilled. Then my mom came on the train. She got off the train in Richmond.
Uh-huh.
And
oh, my.
The trains, they brought her in. She wouldn't fly, of course. And she met Glenn, I think I did the cooking then. Glenn wasn't a chef then, but he became a gourmet chef. But anyway, Mother taught me how to make this gnocchi, you know, the Italian gnocchi, the mm-hmm. potato dumpling. Mm-hmm. And they had a wonderful time. So out of 4 son-in-laws, she loved Glenn the best after she met him. You see?
The smile on your face is beautiful.
Oh, thank you. It's what, you know, once you meet people of different nationalities, there's only one race. It's the human race. People say the black race, the white. But the reason why they're supposedly a black race and a white race. The white race wanted to separate the black race from the white race. But there's only one race, that's the human race. Right? You agree with me there? This is the human race. We're all from the same, from the amoeba or from whatever you believe in. But we're all related, really.
As I understand it, the only reason why we have a difference of skin color is proximity to the equator.
Right.
People that have lived further from the equator have lighter skin so they can absorb vitamin D.
Right.
People that live closer to the equator have more melanin so they can protect their skin from the sun. That's really, it's just a practical change the body makes to adapt to its environment.
That's right, definitely.
Well, so,
go ahead.
What I'd like to talk about a little bit, now that you've got your home in Homestead,
mm-hmm.
and you're living now, your children are going to school in Mill Valley. Were there other black families in Mill Valley at the time? Tell me a little bit what it was like for you and your family living here, and basically the history of black families living here at that time.
Well, Maxine, the lady that sold it, the wonderful person that sold us the house, she said, Ann, I'm going to have a welcoming in the neighborhood party so we can filter out the bigots. She actually said that. I said, okay.
What a progressive woman.
Yeah, she was wonderful. So anyway, the lady across the street, her family, she had a little boy, 7 years old, when Marcus was almost, he was almost six. That little boy, when he'd come home from school, he called Marcus. Marcus was playing out on the front deck. He'd say, "Nigger, nigger, go home. You go home. You don't belong here."
Oh, dear.
7 years old. So that we knew his parents. They didn't come to the party. We knew. We filtered out the biggest. And then there was two other families up the street.
Because that little boy was getting it from home.
Definitely. So they moved away. Finally, they moved. We didn't want him in our neighborhood anyway. And the other two families moved away.
The other two families, you mean the other bigots in the neighborhood?
They were two bigots, yeah. Because they moved
How
away.
How did they demonstrate their bigotry? Did they overtly say things to you?
No, I didn't even. They would lived up the street, but Maxine evidently knew them. But anyway, when Maxine gave us that welcome in the neighborhood party, Glenn said, "Ann, why don't we do the same, but not to get rid of the biggest, just to welcome new neighbors into the neighborhood." We did that for 40 years.
So you were the welcoming committee, as you had been welcomed.
40 years.
So yes. People would come and you'd say, "Howdy, neighbor, come on over and meet your neighbors."
Well, no, we had barbecues, and it would be at your house 1 year, and the other would say, "Oh, I'll have it at my house next year." We went all the way up North Ferndale, mm-hmm. and then on Melrose is a street parallel, mm-hmm. and all the people on Melrose, we had 50, 60 people at different barbecues, and everybody would bring things, and Glenn would do all the cooking all those years.
So to know Glenn was to love Glenn. Is that sort of what I'm getting about him?
He became a gourmet chef.
Well, that's always nice.
I didn't cook for 30 years. We entertained sit-down formal dinners for almost 40 years, I would say.
Was Matthew Davis your neighbor?
Davis. Did he live on North Ferndale?
I believe so. He lived very close. He's the hiker, the one that lived with the beatniks, Kerouac and that gang over on Montford. I interviewed him. I believe he was right off.
Maybe so.
Nice man.
Alan Watts was our neighbor.
Alan Watts was your neighbor?
Yes, down the street. And the house is still there. They remodeled it, of course, through the years.
You mean the one on Montford or on Ferndale?
It's on Laverne. It's right at as you go down North Ferndale, you could run right into it if you didn't make a right.
Oh, maybe that's where Alan Watts. Remembering now, maybe Matthew Davis was on Laverne. Actually,
maybe he lived there after.
So, did you socialize with Alan Watts?
No, never knew that who he was or would have been nice.
So, how about the black families? You had mentioned before this interview the other families that preceded you
This couple from Marin City. They bought a home. They were the first black family in Marin City, and they went
in Marin City or Mill Valley.
They were the first black family that lived in Marin City, and they were the first black family that moved to Mill Valley.
And their name?
I don't remember their names, but one of the daughters became a judge, Dearman or something like that. I forget her full name. They went to Hawaii for a week. They came home and their house was burned down to the ground.
In Mill Valley? So this was a message.
Mm-hmm. And then Dan Collins.
And that was what year?
Probably 46, 47, 48, or 49, I'm not sure.
Do you know what happened to them after that? Did they rebuild?
I'm not sure. We never did know the family. We just had heard this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how about the other family?
Dr. Daniel Collins. He bought a beautiful home just at the base of the mountain up on Summit. And the neighbors got together and they went over to his house and they told Dan, "We don't want you in this neighborhood." And Dan looked at them and he said, "Look, if you pay me three times as much as I paid for this house, you can have it." And they never bothered him since. Now, the third family was Bob and Madeline Pitts. Bob worked for HUD. You know what HUD is.
Mm-hmm. And maybe you can tell people that might be listening what HUD is.
Yeah, HUD.
The housing.
Housing Urban Development. He was head of HUD in the San Francisco Bay Area. And so Madeline Pitts was the granddaughter of a slave, Madeline Pitts. Her great grandmother was a slave. Madeline and Bob, we became friends with them. So they were the third family. So Bob used to come over and help Marcus with his math. He was a very bright young man. And so we became friends with them. Madeline just died about not even 3 or 4 weeks ago. She was in her late 90s. That was the third family. And we were the fourth family.
But you were a little different in that you were biracial. The other families were all black. You were a white woman married to a black man.
Mm-hmm.
Was it different for you? Did black people ever vibe you for being married, crossing that line and marrying a black man?
Never. Because we went to Marin City for years. Glenn's two sisters never left Marin City. I think whenever you segregate any kind of people, whether they're Jews or blacks or Mexicans, it does something to them. The blacks in Marin City don't trust the whites at all.
Mm-hmm.
They never moved out of Marin City. A lot of them are still there. I belong to a social club there called the Sunshine Club.
Mm-hmm.
And I've known these ladies for almost 50 years that belong to the club. A couple men belong to it too. And I also work at the food bank on Mondays in Marin City.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these men come through the line, and I'll say, do you remember Glenn Robinson? And the guy will say, yeah, I remember Glenn Robinson. I said, well, I'm his wife. And they go, oh, my God, you his wife.
And then it's all groovy.
Oh, yeah. Now I even shake some of their hands when they come through to get food. And yeah. So anyway, we didn't have any problems with that one incident with that little boy. And then, one other problem. Marcus was 14 years old. A state highway patrolman comes up the street. And Marcus ran off the deck because I was at my neighbor's two houses up having coffee. So he stopped the car and he told Mark, why are you running off that deck? And Marcus said, well, I live here. And you know what the state highway, do you have any identification on you? A 14-year-old boy. And so Marcus said, no. And so then he left. So Marcus told me about that. I made him come to my house and apologize to my son with his captain or whoever. And he had a crew cut. He looked like, I don't like to label people, like a German Gestapo, dark glasses on. And my husband was there, and he said, and my husband was a deputy marshal, I think at 14, maybe so. So I asked him, I said, why do you have your sunglasses on in the house? And he said, well, I always wear them. I said, my mother always taught me when I talk to somebody, I like to look into their eyes. I told him that. And so he did. I wish I could remember. I should have taped it, what he said to Marcus. I can't remember.
Do you remember? Was it conciliatory or was it one of those passive-aggressive remarks?
I don't remember, honey. I wish I...
Did it affect Marcus badly?
No. Look at him. What he achieved. He went to San Francisco State, majored in two degrees,
mm-hmm.
business and psychology.
And then he became a real estate guy.
At 21, he went into real estate school, and been selling houses ever since.
Ka-ching, ka-ching.
And married to a dentist. And then, we'll go into Curtis later. But anyway. We became friends. Well, I had in my preschool, I'm sorry, making noises.
Yeah.
In my preschool, this couple came down and
were... Well, let's just talk about this. I didn't mention this in the beginning when we were with your intro, but you ran a preschool for many years.
A licensed preschool in my home.
Mm-hmm.
And you only work with 6 children a morning.
Mm-hmm.
But I had 12 enrolled, but I staggered the children. Like on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I had the 2.5 to 3-year-olds. And Tuesday and Thursday, I had the 2 to 2.5-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
I changed 6 diapers every morning for the 2.5-year-old, but it was wonderful. But anyway, this couple comes down the stairs, and they were in a, she was German and he was African American, and he, their daughter, I had that darnest little daughter, and so anyway, he was a very famous football player. He's in the Hall of Fame, Jimmy Johnson. So they lived in Mill Valley up as you go up toward the mountain. So when Jimmy would walk downtown in Mill Valley, we had a motorcycle cop here in Mill Valley.
Officer Johnson?
He was horrible.
That's Officer Johnson.
So he would follow, and at the red light, he'd say, oh, do you live here? And Jimmy would come back and tell
him. He harassed everybody.
Oh, he was horrible.
He was, I'll tell you what, though, I never speed anywhere in Mill Valley. He left an impression on me. He'd get you for going 2 miles over the speed limit.
I know. They got rid of him finally. But anyway, this one day, Jimmy was downtown walking, got in his car. That patrolman followed him all the way home, knocked on his door. Jimmy opened the door. I said, "Do you live here?"
Wow.
Wow.
I'm not sure it's Officer Johnson, by the way. I just want to state for the record.
So anyway, that happened. Yep. That was another thing that happened to Jimmy Johnson. Yeah.
How about for your children? Did they ever have trouble?
They never really came back and told me anything. That was the only thing that Marcus told me when he was 14. Oh, another thing, when Marcus was examined one time, he was 14, the doctor measured his penis. And I was stupid. I didn't go and say, "Why did you measure his penis?"
So you're at a pediatrician?
I don't remember who the doctor was.
And so
was.
The doctor is actually measuring the length of his penis? Is this
at 14.
Is this to collect data with that legend of the...
The blacks are supposed to have. It's not true.
So, anyway. Okay.
But anyway, when they went to Homestead School, my kids were the only black in each class. But maybe the kids were different then. I don't know. Maybe they were more... showed a little more compassion.
Well, now we're going into the 60s, right? And 70s.
70s, 60s, yes, yeah.
When was Curtis born?
He was born in 1965. Yeah.
And Stacy was born?
Three years later, 68.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some social change going on, and certainly there's a lot going on in the civil rights activism is now going. California is a more liberal area overall, not in all places at that time, but more in the urban areas.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there's the whole the activism with gay rights going on in San Francisco now. By the 60s, that's going on, and civil rights. So more liberal.
Oh,
but what was it like in Mill Valley? I mean, was that evident when you lived here? Did you see changes going on?
Yeah, a lot of Japanese were coming in, and not too many, maybe Chinese too. My neighbor across the street, he's a retired pediatrician, and his son just married a Chinese, a cute little thing. And then his other son married a lady from Costa Rica, and... so there's a lot of interracial marriages now going on in Mill Valley.
Did anybody ever describe you as a vanguard in social change? I mean, you know, you were mentioning before the interview about the movie Loving.
Mm-hmm. No, we never went through what they went through. That was incredible.
This is a movie about...
I know. They went to the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Yeah, they won.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're allowed.
They were not allowed to live together. What city were they living in?
Virginia. I'm not sure.
They were forbidden to live together, even with children.
It was a wonderful story. The story.
Black woman, white man.
Mm-hmm. Another woman you would love to interview again, Melba Beals. You remember Melba Beals?
No.
It wouldn't be for Mill Valley Archives, but my friend interviewed her twice. And Glenn and I met her in 1968. Melba Beals was one of nine that integrated Little Rock, Arkansas schools.
Oh, my goodness.
She has two books out.
Could not have been easy.
Oh.
Where does she live?
She lives I go to her house and visit with her and we bring food and whatever, tea or whatever. She lives in San Rafael and Peacock Gap now.
Mm.
Oh, you would love her. And she never carried a chip on her shoulder. Her mother and father gave her up. Because they were so afraid they were going to kill her. And a family from Santa Rosa...
What do you mean they were afraid they were going to kill her?
When she was going back and forth to school.
Oh, they thought...
Mm-hmm. She stayed there, went to school. And then when she was 17, when she graduated from there, that's when her mother and father... Imagine giving your child up like that because of...
They were worried that she was going to get killed where she lived.
Oh, you got to read her books. I have both her books if you want to borrow
them.
What
are the name of the books? I will. I would love to. What are the names of her books?
What are they now? I don't remember
them.
Well,
I'll look her up. Melba Beals.
Melba Beals. What a... Oh,
how about your time in Mill Valley? Do you remember people or places that had particular significance for you?
No, after everybody got to know us, they were wonderful. I mean, we have like 7 or 8 doctors on our street.
Mm-hmm.
All it takes education, you know. You have to be educated. If you live in a rural area and you don't mingle with anybody and you don't know what's going on in the world, you just don't know how to tolerate one another,
mm-hmm.
and get along.
Mm-hmm. I guess the solution for racism is to interact with each other. Racism and an idea dissolves when the reality of interaction takes its place.
Mm-hmm.
So do you remember certain, it's always nice to kind of travel back to Mill Valley to different times to think of some of the stores or restaurants that you enjoyed. Were there places that you particularly remember?
D'Angelo's was here, I think.
D'Angelo's? Well, before that, it was DeVoud's. DeVoud's.
Oh, DeVoud's.
Yes, it was Mediterranean food.
But I think over there, no, before that restaurant there was a drugstore because Stacy was a teenager, Lockwood's drugstore.
Oh, and the woman with the arthritis who worked there, she was very nice, a salesperson.
Oh.
So Stacy worked at Lockwood's,
mm-hmm,
which was a wonderful pharmacy. Okay, so let's talk about what was in Mill Valley at that time. When was Stacy working at Lockwood's?
Oh, I don't remember. When she was 16.
So that would have been in 69, in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
So back then, there were about 4 hardware stores in Mill Valley.
4 what, dear?
Hardware stores.
Yes.
And what else? Do you remember?
I
the pet store, the stationery store, the general store.
Oh, yes, yes.
Sinapa
the general
Farms.
Store. Mm-hmm. All of those. I went to all of those. I love that general store. Mm-hmm.
Yes, that was a wonderful store.
Now they have all furniture and clothing and jewelry. It's a tourist town now.
Yeah, back then it was a real working town.
Yes, it was. Hardly any cars, and
mm-hmm.
you could get out of Mill Valley or come back in Mill Valley. Now going to the beach on the weekend is incredible.
There are more
Where
people.
Where do you live, dear?
I live up above town, Blythedale Ridge.
Oh, okay.
So we lift up and away from town, but nonetheless, I think everyone living here has to deal with the congestion on Miller and Blythedale, and it's
mm-hmm.
an annoyance to say the least.
Mm.
And there's more people. I've interviewed many people who have lived in Mill Valley for a very long time, and often people talk about the time when families only had one car.
Right,
not
yes.
multiple cars.
Yeah, we had one car. That was it.
I
rode the bus a lot.
Did you remember when the depot was a actual bus depot?
I don't remember that.
Did
Maybe.
You and your family enjoy Mount Tamalpais? Were you outdoorsy people?
No, Glenn worked so much. He traveled. When he became deputy marshal, he was gone all the time. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so how long, when did Glenn die?
He died 12 years ago in 2005.
So he would have been how old when he passed away?
It's only 73.
My goodness.
He was a gourmet cook and he ate all the wrong things and he had glaucoma, he had high blood pressure, he had diabetes, did I say that? He had diabetes, he had to give himself shots. He wouldn't give them at the right times. Yeah, he was a fabulous cook.
So he went from having this gorgeous body that you couldn't resist to a body that probably he filled out a little bit.
And he got a little tummy on him. He didn't want me to gain any weight. He said, I want you to look like a 21-year-old. I said, what? I said, what about you? And he said, oh, it looks good on men. I said, oh.
Oh, my. Double standard. So did you never really, or did you at any time face public scrutiny over marrying a black man?
The only time when we were in Alaska, I was standing waiting for the bus, and these airmen came by about 4 or 5 in a car or whatever, and they drove by and they kept looking at me, and I was glad they left because I was by myself waiting for the bus. And I tell everybody the reason why people don't say anything, but they kind of look at us, you know, like that, and because we were such a beautiful couple.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you have beautiful children. Let's talk about your son, Curtis. You know, he's my doctor.
Yes, yeah.
Many people in Mill Valley regard his office and a couple other physicians in town as the last bastion of the old-timey kind of medicine. You can go into his office, which is a simple, humble office, at any time. You don't have to have an appointment.
Yeah, walk-ins. You see that sign? Walk-ins welcome.
Yeah, walk-ins welcome. They're the most responsive, wonderful office. If you call with an emergency, they're there for you. Mm-hmm. This is real hometown care that your son Curtis provides with his office and his wonderful staff.
Yeah.
And for that, I am very, very grateful.
Oh, good.
And it's a great security to know that we have that in our town.
I know.
So let's talk a little bit about Curtis. You know, I had talked to Curtis about interviewing him, but he insisted he and Stacy had a discussion.
Yeah,
and he said that you were the one to talk to. Anyway, you were the keeper of the memories.
Oh.
So let's he said,
be sure and tell Deborah I'm sorry that I couldn't do it or something like that.
Well, he can tell me himself when somebody gets sick in the family, and I'll be there. But tell me a little bit about Curtis, because he's done a lot, and not just for Mill Valley. Why don't you go ahead? You have full license to brag as his mother.
He just made the Pacific Sun the best doctor in Marin.
Yes.
Did you see that? You saw that?
No, I did not see that.
Yeah.
People's Choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, he was quite a soccer player. He played tennis, but not like Marcus would have been. Marcus was ranked in Northern California for tennis. Curtis played tennis, but he played soccer for Tam High. Mm-hmm. He was quite good.
And then he went off to school. I believe he was at Princeton, correct?
No, he went. First, he went down to UC Santa Barbara. He became the president of the student body. Can you believe that?
Oh, okay.
President of the student body, and he wanted to change the whole system in a year's time.
Oh, my.
Because there weren't that many, they didn't have any black ethnic studies and all that down there then.
Mm-hmm, no.
And then he graduated, he wanted to stay 5 years there.
At UC Santa Barbara.
I
would too. Have you seen that beach right next to campus?
I went down and spent a whole week with him. That was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And then he got accepted at UCLA, so that's where he went to medical school. He studied very hard.
I was thinking our Mill Valley Historical Society president, Eric Macris, said he went to school with Curtis. And I confused it because Eric went to Princeton, but in fact, they went to Tam High together.
And who's he again? Who's the name?
Eric Macris. He's the Historical Society president.
Oh.
Anyway, so he went on to UCLA and then studied medicine there.
And then he got accepted right away at in Phoenix, Arizona, to work in the hospital there for 2.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he got married. He was married. I think he got married. Yeah, down in when he was in medical school. And that was okay for 9 years, but it didn't work out there. He had three kids by Maite. She was from Ecuador,
mm-hmm.
and she was working on her master's in anthropology or something like that. I forget there. So that didn't work out. He has three beautiful children, two boys and a girl. And the oldest boy is 26, and that's Ismael. And Italo is 25, almost 24, 25. Italo just got a wonderful job in the financial district, and he's only like 24 and a half.
Mm-hmm.
He's very outgoing, and he's a photographer too.
Mm-hmm.
He does. You can see him on Facebook. He does all these wonderful videos, and when the three of them get together. Michaela's 20 now. She's at in University of Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
She's home for the summer.
So is it Curtis and you are sharing the house over on Ferndale?
North Ferndale, yes.
And did you say the children are living with you too?
Well, no. The two older ones aren't now. Ismael and Italo, they're with their mom. But they come on weekends, you know, and spend time with us. Michaela comes home for the summer. She's with me. But she'll go on weekends with her mom, who lives in Novato.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then Curtis has two by his new lovely wife, Zania. She's from Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
And she has Curtis. They have Curtis Jr. and Samira.
And does she work at the office?
Pardon?
Does Curtis's wife know? What's her name again?
Zanya.
Zanya.
She worked there. You probably met her.
Yeah, but I think I must have. But I
Zanya. Yeah, she looks a lot like Stacy.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I know. I've confused them before. So because Stacy works at the office, Zanya works at the office. This is a family business. A few other doctors in town have their families working with them.
Yeah. So that. So Curtis is very happy now. And he runs all the time. He comes home from work and he's, "Mom, I'm going on a run." He'll run and he does the dipsy by himself sometime. Yeah.
Well, he's still a young pup, but he's done some other things besides running this office here in town. But because he has the clinic, tell me about that.
He has what, honey?
The clinic in Marin City.
Oh yeah, that's going well. Hopefully now, he said, "I hope it goes well."
Tell me about a little bit about his. The clinic that
he and Zanya got together and they spent almost 2 years getting a proposal together to get money to restart the clinic. Mm-hmm. And they got around $1 million to start the clinic. And he hired a dentist, he hired a doctor, and we have a reception there, and I don't know who else, a nurse maybe. But hopefully it's going well.
So this is a clinic for the residents of Marin City?
Well, yeah, they can from Sausalito, they can come from San Rafael there too if they want. They have a clinic also in San Rafael.
Yes, he has a clinic in San Rafael as well.
No, he doesn't. No. Curtis, has nothing to do with that. He just started the one in Marin City.
So he has the one in Marin City. And so what, do people pay at the clinic or is it state-subsidized?
Probably subsidized. Maybe a lot of them are elderly and they're on a Medicaid, Medicare, whatever that is. Yeah, a lot of them.
So how long has the clinic been running?
Probably for 3 years now. Maybe 3 or 4 years.
So what compelled him to be so involved in the community and the care of his community?
Well, his father grew up there, you know, and maybe he's just that way. And he worked there too. When he started the clinic, he was the doctor there.
He was going back and forth.
Mm-hmm, uh-huh. I think so. And then when he hired this doctor and this dentist, so he doesn't have anything to do with it anymore.
So tell me about Stacy.
Stacy, oh, she's my love. I'm glad I have a daughter in the family. Yeah. But anyway, Stacy, she started writing poems. She was about 10 years old. She loved to write poems, little poems. So she became a writer. She graduated from UCLA, majoring in history. But she said, "Mom, you know, I don't think I would want to be a teacher," because she loves to write. So she became a writer. She did Tupac Shakur's autobiography, mm-hmm. Simon & Schuster.
Did she grow up with him? Because he grew up in Marin City, yes.
Yeah, he was there for a while. No, she got to really know him when he was down in Los Angeles. Because Stacy lived in L.A. After she graduated from UCLA, she stayed down there and she worked for UCLA in the department where the donations would come in. She'd keep track of all this, whatever. She worked for UCLA. Then she worked for an agent for football players. She worked for maybe 2 years. Then she met this young boy who was in a class with her at UCLA. She didn't know he was a football player. So she ended up, she went with him for about 10 years while she lived there. And he played for the LA Rams, the Los Angeles Rams.
What's his name?
Roman Pfeiffer. He was an inside linebacker. Mm-hmm. And so they went together for almost 10 years. And they were going to get married a month before the wedding. He called her up at 3 a.m. He says, "Stacy, I don't think this is going to work." It was the best thing he did.
Didn't you like him?
He was okay, but he wasn't that. Is this being recorded?
Yes, you can. Not answer.
Anyway, they went. They broke the wedding off, and a month before the wedding, I bought her a dress. It was beautiful. She would have made a beautiful bride. But anyway. That was how. Then she would come up here, visit, and then her 7 girls from maybe 6th, 7th, and 8th, all the way up to high school, they all graduated together. They're all still very close, all 9 of them.
So her best friends are still from school or her best friends later in
life? They're all close together. So anyway, they see each other. They talk on the phone. One lives in New York on Park Avenue or Park Drive. What's the Park Avenue?
Mm-hmm.
And so Stacy just told me, she said, Mom, she said, for our 50th, she's going to be 50 in December. They want to all get together and rent a big house in up in Napa, I guess, or wherever. And they all want to get together. So they're working on that now. And mm-hmm. The majority of them are going to go, too. Some of them, most of them are married, but I think two are left that are not married. But that's what she's planning on. But anyway, she wrote Tupac Shakur's autobiography, and Simon & Schuster paid her well, but they didn't publish it. They said it wasn't gripping enough and all that. And her mom liked it. Stacy knew Tupac's mom very well.
Uh-huh.
Do you know anything about her at all?
Well, only through his music, and that his mother had addiction issues. For those that may be older, perhaps,
she was very bright.
Listening about Tupac, was a rapper, one of the early rappers, and he had an early demise. And amazing music, and he writes about his mom. I still, if I hear him singing about Dear Mama, I cry every time.
So tell me
about his mother.
His mom was very bright. She went to prison because she was a Black Panther.
Mm-hmm.
And she was her own defense and got out.
Hmm.
Got out
so
of
she
jail.
Was friends with Angela Davis? And
yeah, probably. Mm-hmm. So anyway, Stacy... when she was in L.A., Molly, one of her closest girlfriends, is still down there from high school. And so Molly was in love with Tupac Shakur. They went together for a long time. And so Molly, when Stacy go down, should be with Tupac and Molly at parties. And Tupac told Stacy, if you're not satisfied, if you're never satisfied, ever not satisfied with your job, you come to work for me. But Stacy was, she came back up here then, I think, by then. But anyway, but Tupac was a poet, too. Did you know that?
Mm-hmm.
He wrote beautiful, I have his book of poetry. The poem that I really like was, he wrote for his mother, the rose that grows out of the stone.
Oh, do you remember
beautiful.
The words?
No, I wish I'll have to see if I can find it. That was beautiful. Imagine a rose growing out of just a crack in the stone.
Mm-hmm.
That was lovely. Mm-hmm. So anyway, she'd come up to spend weekends with some of her other girlfriends up here, and she met it took her a long time to get over a Roman. So what's her name? Hannah said. Hannah said, Stacy, I have this nice young man. I want you to meet him. And Stacy said, no, I don't want to meet anybody. For 2 years. So she finally met Jerome, and then she ended up marrying Jerome. Wonderful mm-hmm. husband. A wonderful father. She has two little boys, Quincy and Jace. He's 13 this month. Jace is 11. So anyway, they're happily married, and they live up the street from me in a lovely cottage.
So now let's you know, as we're winding down with this interview, mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about you again, shall we? Listening to your story, I see an interesting dichotomy. I guess maybe it's not a dichotomy, but an interesting balance. Someone that was raised with such rigidity and trauma. You're kind of like the rose that grew out of the stone, too,
mm-hmm.
because
yes.
somehow or another there's a freshness about you, an enthusiasm. You come from, you don't seem to have a chip on your shoulder
no.
about what happened to you when you were younger, but you had a very traumatic childhood. You were raised in an area that was socially constraining. Yet you don't seem to carry it with you. You went off and very young, fell in love with this guy, married him. He's Black. Comes, travel here and there, seem to enjoy yourself nicely. You thrive. You thrive in a lot of different environments.
Mm-hmm.
Are you just an easygoing gal? Is that it? Or are you just...
Yeah. Whenever I think about the past every now and then, but then it just leaves me. When I, you know, well now we're talking all about it. When I go home, I don't think about it at all. Thank goodness. Mm-hmm.
And you, you're busy. I mean, we had to schedule. Tell me about your life in Mill Valley now.
You should see my calendar. It's incredible.
Yeah, tell me.
On Mondays, I do the food bank from 10 to 1:30 or 2. Tuesdays, I belong to the Mill Valley Community Center Senior Club. And we have chair yoga every Tuesday, and then we have bag lunch, and then we have bingo, which I love this group. There's about 25 of us, and they're all wonderful seniors. So we have such a good time. And then on Wednesdays, I belong to another social club called the Sunshine Club. It's all black. I'm the only white one. And all these ladies and a couple of men belong to it, and they all grew up in Marin City. And it's just a social club. We have bake sales at different times to raise money for our club. We go to the gambling casino. We have fun there. And most of them go to to enjoy the lunches there. What do they call when all the food is out there and you help yourself?
Buffet.
And then on Thursdays, Wednesdays and Fridays, I usually have my massage. And then Saturdays I go to the acupuncture. So my week is just.
And at this point, you are now how old?
87.
It's shocking to me. What people can't see, because they're not here with me looking through my eyes at you, is there's just no way you look that age.
Thank you.
Absolutely no way.
Thank you for your compliment.
Yes, you have. You are beautiful.
When I talk on the phone, when I call Comcast, and they're in Honduras, or they're in Jamaica, or they're in the Philippines, and we start talking about ages or something, I don't know how it comes up, they said, "You mean to tell me you're a senior? You don't sound like a senior," they'll tell me.
You seem very, very, you have an essence, a bright, a youthful essence for sure, and spirit.
Well, they say you should never leave the child leave your body. Once you do, you get old fast. So I laugh a lot, and I have two wonderful little Karen Terriers. They know 70 words. When I walk them in the morning, we either go up the street or down the street. So I talk. I said, "Should we go up the street or down the street?" I'll say, "Okay, let's go up the street." And they turn and we go up the street.
It's
amazing.
You've made choices in your life against the grain. You've done things. You learned a lie so you could do what you wanted with your father. You walked away from that the social mores of the day. You've entered into new worlds. You've smiled, I'm sure. And I mean, what would you tell to somebody about anybody going through having to break barriers or to push aside barriers in their life? I mean, what are the secrets to your happiness?
Well, I never had anything when I was a kid. Never had a baby doll, never had a Christmas tree, never had telephone in the house, no music. So I think it's important that as you grow up, if you've had a life that I've had, forget it. Forgive your parents or whoever did anything to you. Forgive them, and then that way you could, and you never look back, and you just look forward, as our dear Obama has always said, never look back, move forward.
Well, I think that's a beautiful way to end this interview.
Thank you, dear.
Thank you so much for your story and for sitting with me today. This has been wonderful.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so glad we had the opportunity to talk and for me to meet you at last.
And we'll have to go out to lunch. I'll take you out to lunch.
I believe you just had lunch with somebody I interviewed just the other day, John Bottiger, the grandson of...
Oh, that's right.
Oh, hey, you know what? I think there's one thing we forgot to talk. We have to add on, I realize. Well, first, John Bottiger, the grandson of Eleanor and Franklin Roosevelt.
Yeah,
did you have a nice lunch?
Oh, yeah. I took him to the Mountain Home Inn, but it's not on now.
It's on.
It's still on.
Yes, well... Some things.
But anyway, it was a lovely
nice
lunch.
Nice setting.
Oh, it was a beautiful setting. And we walked out. I said, "Let's look at the view, John." And we looked at all Mill Valley, you know, the view up there. It was very nice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway,
and what we didn't talk about was with Glenn and the Patty Hearst.
Oh, that's something else.
Well, we can.
Glenn handled Patty Hearst. When this case went on, papers from all over the world, which is, he was on the front page with Patty.
Mm-hmm.
I still have a lot of the papers. And Glenn and a couple of deputy marshals found her in, I don't know how the word got out, but they found her in San Francisco. So Glenn picked her up and they put her in the county jail, I guess. Yeah, the San Francisco County Jail at first. Then when the trial started, Glenn deputized me because they didn't have a female deputy marshal at the time.
Mm.
So he deputized me as the first deputy U.S. marshal, female. So anyway, so when the trial went on, every night at 5 o'clock, I'd go to the city. Marcus was, he was old enough to take care of Stacy and Curtis. I would go in the city and go to the jury was sequestered at the Holiday Inn.
Mm-hmm.
We had the whole 20th floor. It was all the doors were had locks on, so the jurors couldn't walk out and go off anywhere. So what I had to do is I had to monitor the television. I'd sit with them when they were watching TV. If something came on about the case, I had to change the channel immediately. Mm-hmm. I had to listen to the telephone conversations. And this one couple had just gotten married. He was a juror. So anyway. But I did that for 6 weeks. We took them out every night, the jury. We took them out every night for dinner, to the theater, to wherever the, you know, shows, or to keep them happy. And that's what I did for 6 weeks. I'd leave at 7 o'clock. We were supposed to stay up all night long, Glenn and I. And I'd leave at 7 in the morning, come back home, take care of my kids, get them off to school, wherever. So I did that for 6 weeks. I was I couldn't go on when Patty Hearst, they put her in a jail in San Bruno. So every day Glenn went to pick her up, he had to get a different route. They wanted to kill her.
Mm-hmm. They being?
Whoever was left from the Sibonese Liberation, that she went with.
Uh-huh.
And she really liked being with them. She got a lot of attention.
You know, this is something, we'll just get a little context. This is the granddaughter of it, or I forget exactly where she was in the Hearst family, but extremely wealthy family. She gets kidnapped by the Sibonese the SLA, and she, according to her defense, brainwashed.
Mm-hmm.
No, you're shaking your head no?
No, they never kept her in a closet. They were all black, weren't they? Were the majority in black, or some of them were black? I'm not sure. Usually blacks don't treat their people like that. As much as they've been through, the blacks, all for 400 years or so, they still show a lot of compassion for one another. You know what I mean? I think she enjoyed being with them. And they gave her, they sent Patty away when she was 12 years old to boarding school.
Her family spent.
Yeah, her family. And she never got any attention from, no love and affection and, so anyway, Glenn did that for 6 weeks, and I could have gone with him because he had deputized me, but I was afraid. I didn't want to go
because mm-hmm.
somebody might, harm, kill both of us.
And you have children.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's a little adjunct. I'm glad mm-hmm. we caught that at the end. So now what I didn't say when I introduced you, now I can say with a certain certainty that I am introduced. I have just enjoyed interviewing you. A woman, Annabella, a mm-hmm. mother, a good mother, as you said.
Grandmother of nine.
of nine. A preschool teacher. A preschool, well, I guess not really a teacher, provider.
A what?
You ran your own preschool.
Right, yeah, and I went I was 39 years old, and I was going to the church in Marin City, the Presbyterian, and I worked in the they had a church school for 2.5 and 3 year olds,
mm-hmm.
and the director said, Ann, you are a natural. You should go to the College of Marin, get your degree in early childhood education, and that's what I did.
And so you were a teacher, so you're preschool teacher and deputy
U.S. Marshal.
U.S.
Female.
Marshal.
Mm-hmm.
And Free spirit.
Very free spirit.
Thank you so much. And that concludes our interview.
Oh, thank you for having me.